Bonjour tout le monde. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's invitational webinar, Prenatal Screening Ontario Overview, Provincial Screening and Support Tools for Public Health Units. Before we begin this webinar, we would like to acknowledge that Bourne, Ontario, which is hosted at CHEO, is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe Nation. We honor the enduring presence of Indigenous peoples and their long-standing stewardship of these lands. We recognize that Indigenous communities have been knowledge keepers since time immemorial, shaping understandings of health, family, and community that continue to guide us today. We also acknowledge that several colleagues today are joining from territories across Ontario and beyond, home to diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples. We invite you to reflect on the land you are on and the Indigenous peoples who care for it. Today's webinar is being recorded. A recording will be shared with participants as soon as it becomes available. My name is Mariah, and my role at Bourne is Strategic Partnerships and Network Coordinator. I will be hosting today's webinar. I am joined by my colleague, Emily Rowe, Communications Specialist, who will be managing the chat box and other items behind the scenes today. And I am now very pleased to introduce to you today's speakers. Our first speaker is likely a familiar face. Paula Morrison is a Clinical Content Specialist with Bourne, where she coordinates EHBHC and provides support to public health units. She is a registered nurse with a strong background in maternal and child health, spanning both hospital and community settings. Her experience includes frontline clinical care, education, and management roles. And our next speaker is Isla Fitzgerald. Isla is a board-certified genetic counselor who obtained her Master's of Science in Genetics Counseling from the University of British Columbia in 2014. She joined the Prenatal Screening Ontario team in June 2025. Most recently, she worked as a genetic counselor at TELUS Health, playing a pivotal role in establishing and growing the company's national preventative genetics program. Prior to this, she worked for 7 years at North York General Hospital, with a specialization in preconception and prenatal genetics, and has experience working in the private sector in preventative medicine at Medcan and fertility genetics at Tripod Fertility. Isla has also worked as a genetic counselor in the United States and in the Bahamas. She is a former board member of the Canadian Board of Genetic Counseling. Thanks so much, Paula and Isla, for delivering today's webinar. Today, we encourage you at any point to submit your questions using the Q&A box. We'll do our best to address as many as possible during the discussion period at the end. And because we're a smaller group today, you also have the option of using the raise hand symbol and unmuting yourself to engage in discussions as well. And with that said, I'll now turn it over to you, Isla, to get us started.
Thank you so much, Mariah. I'm just going to share my screen here. We'll just make sure that everyone can see my slides okay. Yeah, I'm seeing some nods. Okay, wonderful. So as Mariah said, my name is Isla Fitzgerald, and we are going to be talking a little bit about what we do here at Prenatal Screening Ontario, and I'm going to also highlight some of the resources and support tools that you may be able to use at your units, but also for your clients. I was told today that instead of patients, you say clients. I might mix those two terms up. I might say pregnant individuals, but we will use those terms interchangeably today. Okay, so in terms of what we'll talk about today, I'll give you a little bit of an overview of Prenatal Screening Ontario. We will do a little genetics refresher, what I'm calling Genetics 101, and then we'll talk about aneuploidy screening in Ontario and our upcoming program, which will be fetal blood group genotyping that we're hoping will be launched later this year. And then I'll highlight some key resources for healthcare providers and also for clients that will be available and are available on our website. Okay, as you very well may know, since you work with Paula, Bourne, Ontario. Bourne is the Better Outcomes Registry and Network. This is a provincial health registry that collects and manages data about pregnancy, birth, and childhood in Ontario. And it was granted registry status under PHIPAA in 2009, which allows us to securely collect and share personal health information to improve healthcare. We are funded by the Ontario Ministry of Health and administered by CHEO in Ottawa. So, Prenatal Screening Ontario, or PSO, is a program that's housed within Bourne, Ontario, and it was created to coordinate and oversee prenatal screening services across the province in 2017. We serve as a central resource for patients and healthcare providers looking for reliable information and updates about prenatal screening. Currently, screening in Ontario focuses on aneuploidies, or what we call chromosome conditions. But as I mentioned, we will be expanding to include fetal blood group genotyping. So we are a small but mighty team. We have data scientists, we have clinical experts, project management professionals, as well as knowledge translation and implementation scientists. And our team is led by two co-medical directors, Dr. Christine Armour from CHEO Genetics and Dr. Nan Okin, an MFM at Sunnybrook. So this is our mandate. We have six different tiers of our mandate, but I wanted to focus on the no knowledge mobilization piece specifically for the purposes of today's presentation. So this portion of our mandate really is to provide prenatal screening related education, information, and support to healthcare providers, pregnant individuals, and their families through knowledge mo mobilization efforts. And I'll tell you a little bit about how we're doing that today. Okay, so we're going to get into our genetics refresher section here. The reason that I wanted to get into this section is because, as I mentioned, our screening right now in Ontario focuses on screening for two chromosome conditions or genetic conditions. So, aneuploidy screening, these are optional screening tests available to all pregnant individuals in Ontario. They're non-invasive by nature, so they involve either a blood draw and/or an ultrasound, so no risk at all to the baby or to the pregnant person. And we're screening for two conditions. These are called trisomy 21, also known as Down syndrome, and trisomy 18, which is also called Edwards syndrome. Screening essentially puts pregnancies into one of two categories: those at a higher chance of having a baby with a chromosome difference, where more testing would be offered, and those at a lower chance of having a baby with a chromosome difference, and they typically would have routine care. There would be the option of doing diagnostic testing if the first tier screening is positive or high risk. Okay, so going back to high school biology, if we think about a typical cell, a human cell, typically we have 46 chromosomes inside each of our cells, and these contain all of our genetic information that we get from our parents. For females, they typically would have two X chromosomes, as you can see on the left, and for males, they typically would have an X and a Y. Within each pair of chromosomes, one is coming from the mother, and one is coming from the father, or one is coming from the egg, and one is coming from the sperm. So, Down syndrome or trisomy 21, the reason it's called trisomy 21 is because it is caused when there are three copies of chromosome number 21. We see this in about 1 in 800 babies. It is a very variable condition, and what that means is that the symptoms and severity can be quite variable amongst people with Down syndrome. When people are pregnant with a baby with Down syndrome, there is an increased chance of miscarriage throughout the pregnancy, or also stillbirth as well after 20 weeks gestation. But if a baby does survive to term, they generally would have some degree of intellectual disability, and there can be an increased chance for certain health conditions. Again, because it's variable, not all children or adults with Down syndrome will show these health conditions, but they'll just have an increased chance of having them. So about 50% of babies with Down syndrome, for example, would be born with a heart defect at birth. Some individuals might have eyesight or hearing difficulties, and a higher chance for Alzheimer's disease later in life. At this time, the lifespan for people with Down syndrome is typically into the 60s. Trisomy 18 or Edwards syndrome is the other chromosome condition that we screen for. This is much more rare than Down syndrome, and we see this in about 1 in 6,000 to 8,000 babies. Many babies or pregnancies with this condition do not survive to the end of the pregnancy. If a baby with trisomy 18 is born, usually they would have severe intellectual disability and health concerns. And there are a handful of reports of babies with these conditions that have lived past 1 year of age. They typically would have quite significant health issues and, as I mentioned, intellectual disability. So, how do these chromosome conditions happen? Most of the time, these happen by chance. They're not usually inherited within a family. And there are rare types of these conditions where someone could have a difference in their chromosomes that make them more likely to have a baby with one of these conditions, but vast majority of the time, they do happen by chance in either the egg or the sperm prior to conception. Everyone has a chance of having a baby with one of these conditions, and we know that that chance goes up as the pregnant individual gets older. So I know what's on your screen is really tiny writing, but I'll just highlight here that if we're just looking at age alone, for someone who will be 30 at the age of delivery, the chance for Down syndrome is around 1 in 1,000, so about 0.1%. If we flip that number around, of course, we would say there's a 99.9% chance that someone at 30 would not have a baby with Down syndrome. If we go up a little bit by about a decade, if someone's 40 at the age of delivery, we would say that their chance for Down syndrome has gone up. So it's around 1%. But again, if we flip that number around, there's about a 99% chance that that baby would not have Down syndrome. So age can be a good starting point to be able to say what the chance is, but it's really not the best way to estimate the chance for these conditions. And so that's why we have a screening system in place in Ontario to start with the age, but incorporate other factors within the pregnancy to get a more accurate risk assessment. All right, so this here is a map, kind of a choose your own adventure of how aneuploidy screening in Ontario works. So generally what happens is that someone would be offered aneuploidy screening at their first prenatal screening appointment, which often would be in the first trimester, not always. Sometimes people come later to care and we can always talk about screening in the second trimester as well. But ideally it would be in the first trimester so they really have some time to think about whether this screening would be valuable to them or not. So generally what happens is if someone is offered screening, if they decline screening, they would just proceed with routine care in the pregnancy. Whereas if they accept, generally the options fall into one of two categories. The first is what we call multiple marker screening, and the second is what we call non-invasive prenatal testing or NIPT. The uptake of prenatal screening in Ontario, this is data from 2025, and it shows us that across the province, about 77 or 78% of pregnant patients are deciding to proceed with screening, whereas about 22, 23% or so are deciding not to do screening. So that could just be a helpful reference as we go through this information today. So let's start with multiple marker screening. I know there's lots of acronyms involved in screening, so sometimes we call this MMS. This is either enhanced first trimester screening, which by its name shows us that it's done in the first trimester, or second trimester screening. So as I mentioned, if someone presents later to care, let's say they present to care at 15 weeks, there is still an option for them to do screening. They would just do second trimester screening instead of first trimester screening. This is always publicly funded for singleton pregnancies. So the most common type of multiple marker screening is this EFTS or enhanced first trimester screening. So we'll focus on this one today. This involves an ultrasound and a blood draw that's done between 11 weeks and 2 days, and 13 weeks and 3 days. On the ultrasound, as you can see in the image here, what the sonographer is doing is they're measuring something called the NT, or the nuchal translucency. And this is a pocket of fluid that's at the back of the baby's neck. Every baby will have this, but the larger this pocket of fluid gets, the higher the chance the baby could have a chromosome condition or another health concern. So they take the individual's age-related risk, as we mentioned before. So we always start with age, and then they factor in this NT measurement, some protein levels from the blood work, and these proteins are made by the pregnancy, by the baby and the placenta, and then some clinical information. And what they do is they put these all together into an algorithm, and then they're able to say whether the chance for Down syndrome and trisomy 18 is higher or lower. So if this screening comes back negative, we would proceed with routine care for that patient unless there's any other concerns identified. Whereas if it comes back positive, there's the option of doing further testing through NIPT, and this would now be publicly funded. Paula, I know I can see you on the screen here. If I move my mouse, can you see it? Wonderful. Okay, I'm going to use that because I know this slide can be a little bit busy. So if someone comes back screen positive, they would have the option of doing further testing through NIPT, which would now be publicly funded. This is another screening test, but it's a much more accurate screening test than MMS. The other option would be to do diagnostic testing, such as a CVS or amniocentesis. This would require a referral to genetics or MFM. So, because we work within a registry, we have access to the cytogenetic and birth outcomes in pregnancies where screening has been done. And really, what this allows us to do is to monitor the performance of the screening tests in our province. In the interest of time, I won't get into the nitty-gritty details on this slide. I know there's lots of numbers, but I've just put an orange box here to highlight what I really want you to focus on. And just as a point, these performance statistics are always available on our website, and we update them annually. So if you ever want to dive into these statistics, they're all here on our website. So for Down syndrome, what you can see here is the sensitivity or the detection rate is around 88%. So what this means is that 88% of pregnancies with Down syndrome will indeed get a screen positive result when they do first trimester screening. The false positive rate is about 6%. So this means that 6% of pregnancies will get a screen positive result when the baby does not have Down syndrome. For trisomy 18, the detection rate is around 87% with a very low false positive rate. I wanted to take a moment to highlight one of the resources that we have. We have an information line at Prenatal Screening Ontario, and one of the most common questions we get is from patients saying, "I have a stack of requisitions. I have no idea where to go to book my enhanced first trimester screening." So we created this resource. Right now it's available in English and in French, but we're in the midst of translating it into 13 other languages, just because it is such a commonly asked question. And this basically breaks down how the patient goes and proceeds with first trimester screening. So essentially what they have to do is they have to book an ultrasound first, go for the ultrasound. The sonographer will then write the NT measurement on their requisition, and then they go get their blood work. And this can be very confusing for patients. I know it sounds simple, but when you're handed a stack of requisitions, there can be a lot of confusion around this. So this is a handout that we have available on our website. We're also happy to send you copies of it if it would be helpful for you in your units. There is also an interactive nuchal translucency ultrasound map that's linked on that PDF version of that handout. And the purpose of this is when patients are trying to book their NT ultrasound, we want to make sure that they know where to call and who to contact to book this appointment. So this map is found on our website, and then the patient can use the plus or minus signs to zoom in close to where they live. And what that will show them is all of the ultrasound clinics close to their home that offer this NT ultrasound. It is a specialized ultrasound, and so it's not offered at every single ultrasound clinic. So this is an example of someone living in Sudbury. You can see these orange dots are where they can get an NT ultrasound. Okay, so let's move on to NIPT. So this stands for non-invasive prenatal testing. NIPT is the most accurate prenatal screening test for chromosome differences. It's only publicly funded in certain cases. So it's publicly funded for all twin pregnancies and for singleton pregnancies that meet certain criteria. So part of that criteria would be, for example, someone who gets a positive first trimester screen result, they would be eligible. Sometimes we also see if someone's over the age of 40 at the time of delivery, again, because we know their chance of having an underlying chromosome condition would be higher, and so they would meet that criteria as well. If someone doesn't meet criteria, they can always choose to pay for NIPT out of pocket. So how does it work? NIPT looks at cell-free fetal DNA. These are fragments of DNA that have come from the placenta and are in the bloodstream of the pregnant client. So the lab basically analyzes the sample to compare the amount of DNA that's come from specific chromosomes compared to what we would expect to see if the baby were to have that typical number, that 46 chromosomes. And NIPT can screen for Down syndrome and trisomy 18, but it can also screen for trisomy 13, which is a much more rare chromosome condition, and also can look at the X and the Y, the sex chromosomes. This can be done after 9 weeks at Life Labs and 10 weeks at Dynacare, and those are our two provincial laboratory partners here. We recently updated our clinical criteria for funded NIPT, and these updates are really aiming to provide clarity and consistency across the province. I will just review these briefly. What you see on your screen are what we call the Category 1 criteria. As I mentioned, the first criteria being a positive screen, we've already talked about that one, the age of the pregnant individual being over the age of 40. But the part that we've updated here is really to clarify how IVF pregnancies are determined to be eligible for funded NIPT. And this is based on the age of the egg. So if the age of the egg at retrieval is 39 years or older, the client would be eligible. The next would be a previous pregnancy or child with Down syndrome, trisomy 18 or 13, a twin pregnancy, or an increased NT measurement. So the NT measurement is what I was mentioning earlier, that ultrasound they're measuring the back of the baby's neck. And we know that if there's any increased measurement that would be over 3.5 millimeters, that would be associated with certain conditions that NIPT may not be screening for as well. And so we always really recommend that prompt referral to genetics or MFM for genetic counseling in those cases. There have also been changes made to Category 2 criteria, but really these can only be ordered by a genetics or MFM specialist. So I'm not going to go into those in detail today, but just to be aware that they've been made. So there are new NIPT requisitions. These are on our website, very easy to find under the requisition button on our homepage. And we also have an NIPT ordering guide. This is for healthcare providers who are ordering NIPT if they don't do it often and they don't know the steps. This goes through all of the steps one by one and just makes it very simple in terms of how to order this test. In terms of the performance here, this is Ontario specific data and it combines the data from Life Labs and Dynacare. And it also is combining data from publicly funded and private pay singleton pregnancies. So you can see here that the detection rate is a lot higher. So what that means is the detection rate here is over 99%. And a really strong benefit of this screening test is this extremely low false positive rate. For trisomy 18, the detection rate is also quite high, around 96%. Okay, so those with a high-risk NIPT, if it comes back high-risk, they would then have the option of doing diagnostic testing. And again, it's an option. Not everyone chooses to do so. Whereas if it comes back low-risk, they would proceed with routine care. So I just wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about diagnostic testing. This would be what we call chorionic villus sampling, which is a placental biopsy, or an amniocentesis. And in amniocentesis, they take a very small amount of fluid, the amniotic fluid from around the baby. These tests are diagnostic. What that means is they can tell us for sure, yes or no, whether the baby has one of these chromosome conditions that we're screening for. And so some patients choose to proceed with something like this because they can get a concrete answer about whether the baby has one of these conditions. Having said that, the downside to these tests is that there is a small risk of miscarriage. And so some patients choose not to do this testing and they want to proceed regardless of the result from this. So if someone was referred to genetics or MFM, they would typically see a genetic counselor. The genetic counselor would discuss the screening results, information that can be gained from these types of procedures, and the risks of miscarriage associated, and then they would have a discussion about what might be valuable for them in the pregnancy. So all of this information, when we're thinking about aneuploidy screening as a whole, this information really is helpful to ensure that the baby and the client receive the right care during their pregnancy, to ensure that there's the best place for delivery for the baby, to ensure that the baby gets the right care after delivery, especially if we know a baby has Down syndrome, for example. We'll want to make sure that that baby is born in a place that can handle if the baby has heart defect, for example, that they would be delivered at a tertiary care center so they can get appropriate care. And we also want to ensure that the clients have pregnancy management options that feel right for them. Okay, so that's aneuploidy screening. I'm just going to do a little plug on our upcoming screening, which is called fetal blood group genotyping. As I mentioned, we're really hopeful that this will be launched in this year in 2026. So this uses very similar technology to the NIPT test that I was just mentioning. It can be performed as early as 11 weeks, and this test will be new to Ontario, but it's been around in Europe for about 16 years, unsurprisingly. I know they're always ahead of the game. But Ontario should be the first province to offer this testing. Quebec is maybe soon after us, or maybe they'll pull ahead and launch this before we do. So these two provinces will be the first in Canada. These are highly accurate screening tests with over 99% sensitivity, which really minimizes the risk of false negatives. So there's two different tests. The first is called fetal RhD screening, and this will predict the fetal RhD status for patients who are RhD negative. So right now, if a patient is RhD negative, they're given RIG or RhoGAM treatment without knowing the baby's blood type. But what we know is that 40% of pregnancies, where the pregnant individual is RhD negative, the baby is also RhD negative. So there's no need for that treatment. So really, this would enable targeted RIG treatment for patients that actually need it. So this would be applicable only to pregnancies without anti-D antibodies, and we expect this to affect about 21,000 pregnancies per year in Ontario. And this test will be offered by Canadian Blood Services. The second test will be a rarer test. It's only about 1,800 pregnancies per year in Ontario. And this is what we call alloimmunized fetal blood group genotyping, which is a bit of a mouthful. We call it alloFBGG for short. And this will determine the fetal antigen status for pregnant clients with antibodies big D, big C, little c, big E, and/or Kel. And this really will allow for targeted monitoring for pregnancies that are actually at risk for a condition called hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn. So each of these tests will be performed at as I mentioned, a designated central lab in Ontario. So they'll need separate requisitions. Our team has been doing rounds and webinars to spread the awareness about these new tests. But once we have an official launch date, we'll be sure to have all available resources on our website. And we have lots of great resources in the works for patients and providers. Okay, so now we're getting into the exciting stuff. This is the resources that we have for your units to support you, but also the patients that you serve. So really, when we're thinking about screening as a whole, how can we ensure that the patient is making an informed choice when they're deciding about screening? And really what that is by taking the time to explore their values, their attitudes, and to provide accurate information about their options. So it's really ideal if pregnant clients are given all relevant information and then they're supported in making personal, value consistent decisions. But we've heard from many providers that this conversation about screening can be a challenging one, especially with limited time. There's so much information that the provider needs to cover in that first prenatal appointment, and sometimes it can be hard to discuss it all, but also to know how to start that conversation with a client about their values, their beliefs, and whether screening would be of value to them. So we have some really great resources that we've created at Prenatal Screening Ontario. For this slide here, I just wanted to show you we've made a checklist. So this really supports full, all-encompassing pretest counseling. So as long as the provider goes through this information, that screening's not diagnostic, it's optional, it doesn't test for all possible conditions. To discuss the clinical features and variability of the conditions that the test does look for, to discuss the differences between the screening types, whether it's publicly funded and if not, what the cost would be. when it's done in the pregnancy and how long the results take to come back, what those results could be and what the next steps would be, but also to provide reasons why some people might want to choose screening, whereas some might decline. So really, it's wanting to take that time to explore how screening may or may not be helpful for a client. So we have some great resources. This one here is called How to Offer Prenatal Screening for Chromosome Differences. So this is for healthcare providers. It essentially goes through questions for your patient to consider when they're thinking about screening and whether it might be helpful for them, and counseling points to consider. So it helps to kind of guide that conversation and give them a starting point for that conversation. We also have an office guide for prenatal screening options for chromosome differences. This was a very hot commodity at the last couple conferences that we were at. Providers were very excited about this resource, which is new. Again, I know it's small on your screen, but we'll be sure to circulate this around by email after our webinar today. Really, what this is, it's a cheat sheet that compares first trimester screening, second trimester screening, and NIPT. So all of the information I just covered very quickly, it's all here in detail. It tells you when in the pregnancy it's done, whether it's publicly funded, what it's screening for, and what the accuracy is. So this can be a really helpful tool for healthcare providers. We also have an online tool. This is for patients. This is called My Screening Pathway, and this was launched in November. And this is for people who are pregnant or who are planning a pregnancy so that they can learn more about prenatal screening and to find out which screening options are right for them. So it basically takes all of that information that I've already covered today in a patient-friendly manner. So it's very simple, the language is simple, they don't get into all the details of the screens. It's really just high level so that it helps patients really understand what screening is and what it's looking for. And then they can do a 2 or 3 minute quiz. So they put in some information about their pregnancy. They'll say, okay, this is how far along I am in the pregnancy. I'm pregnant with one baby or two babies or more. It's an IVF pregnancy or not. And then they get an output. And you can see that on the right of your screen here. So this is showing, okay, so you are here. So you're around 9 weeks in the pregnancy. And then it can show you what screening tests would be available to you based on the information that you provided. This can then be printed, or you could just bring it on your phone to your appointment to be able to really support that pretest counseling conversation with the provider. So ideally, patients would know about this before that pretest counseling discussion so that they have a bit of background knowledge. So I just wanted to highlight that we do have posters. They're 11 by 14. So they're not massive, or sorry, 11 by 17 inches. They're not massive. They're about, well, I guess you can't really tell on my webinar screen, but they're about this big. And these can be hung up in your unit if you're interested. We're happy to send these out. These are posters for patients. They can scan the QR code and it takes them directly to My Screening Pathway. On the bottom right of this poster, you can also see that they can contact our genetic counselors, myself included. And this is our information line. So I wanted to talk about this next. This is for any pregnant individual or someone planning a pregnancy and any healthcare provider. And it's a free province-wide service. You can see the phone number and email there in the top right. This is staffed, as I said, by genetic counselors and screening specialists. It is a free service, and they can contact us Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Leave a message. We will always call back, usually within 24 hours. So this is a really helpful service that we have. The reason I wanted to highlight this is we typically get around 400 calls per year, but last year we had a big spike. As you can see in this blue line, we had 523 calls last year, which was a big increase from the years prior to that. So more and more people are learning about this service. About half of the people who contact us are healthcare providers, with the other half being patients or their partners. And we're also able to track what types of inquiries we're getting. And part of this is so we can know maybe we need to highlight some of our resources more strategically on our website. So if we're getting lots of questions, maybe we need to highlight that on the homepage. And so we've moved some things around in response to the types of questions we get. And it also can help us guide resource creation. So as you can see on the right of your screen, one of the most commonly asked questions we get is how to get or order multiple marker screening. So that goes back to that handout that I showed you near the beginning of the presentation of how to get first trimester screening. We get this question so often, we figured it would be helpful to actually have something that we can show to patients or email to providers. We also get questions about how to interpret first trimester screening results. So we often get questions from healthcare providers saying, I ordered first trimester screening, it came back positive. Now what do I do? So we are always here to help provide that information for them and to guide them on next steps. We also get questions about understanding the eligibility for publicly funded NIPT and those seeking results. Now, just a note, we don't have access to results. So if someone is calling looking for results, we always just give them the lab contact information so that they can contact there. General genetic counseling questions fall outside of our scope here at Prenatal Screening Ontario, but we can now point healthcare providers to the GC Connect phone line initiative. This was started by the PGP, the Provincial Genetics Program, this year, and it's just a hotline that providers can call if they have general genetic counseling questions. And the other thing I wanted to show you, this is on our website here. So, just in the top menu, we have the tools and resources section, and we've divided our resources for providers and for patients. So, providers, we have requisitions and ordering guides, we have referrals and maps within the province, any webinars that we've given in the past, and that performance data I was talking about earlier. If you want to dive into those statistics, those are available on our website. Also, our team publishes a lot of publications, publishes papers, I should say. And so all of our PSO related publications can be found here. In terms of resources for patients, we have all of them here. So we have links to some of our partnering organizations like OMAMA, which is also part of the Bourne network. And then we also have these handouts that I was mentioning earlier. In addition to the resources I mentioned already, in the middle here, you can see we have an 8-page booklet that we created along with the Ministry of Health, and this has been translated into 15 languages. So these have also been a very popular commodity at conferences that we've had a booth at. There are many providers in Ontario where they have patients or a patient population where English is not their first language, and it can be really hard to go through all of this information. So we have these pamphlets available as a PDF, but also printable pamphlets if you are aware of anyone who's interested in non-English or non-French resources. And really, these tools are really designed to make prenatal screening information more accessible and understandable for patients. In terms of what we have for healthcare providers, I've gone through a few of these already, but on the left here, we also have how to discuss results when they come back. So really, what are the discussion points that the provider will want to cover if they get a screen positive result or a screen negative result from multiple marker screening, or if they get a high risk result, a low risk result, or an inconclusive result from NIPT? So again, I'm happy to share these with you after the webinar. FBGG has not launched yet, but you can be sure that we've got great resources for when it launches. These are for providers and for patients. They will include eligibility criteria, how the testing works, and how to interpret results. We have great clinical flow charts to walk the provider through how to order these tests. And these will all be available on our website once FBGG is live. And then lastly, we have a couple of pages on our website. We have our Regional Genetic Center referrals and our MFM Center referrals. So this basically would allow a provider or a patient to look to see where they live and what the closest clinic is if they do need to be referred to that clinic. Unfortunately, we can't make any referrals through our website, but it has all the contact information for each of those clinics there, and we keep that up to date. So I wanted intentionally, I have left this about 20 minutes or so for the end of our presentation because I was hoping, since it's a smaller group today, a smaller webinar, I was really hoping we could take the time. Number one, I can answer any questions that you have about prenatal screening, but also hoping to understand a little bit more about how we can best support you. Are there resources that could be helpful for your units or the providers or patients in your region? Clients in your region, I should say. So we are here to help. If you're not sure and you think of an idea in a few weeks, you can always contact us here and we would be happy to collaborate as well. So thank you so much for your attention. I wanted to just put a QR code here. This is to subscribe for updates. You may already be subscribed to the Bourne newsletter, but this is separate. So this would be for the Prenatal Screening Ontario newsletter. We send out much fewer newsletters than Born does. We usually only send out two or three a year, just when we have something very important to announce or something very exciting. So again, if once FBGG launches, that would be an example of something that's sent out along with links to all of those resources. And our email address is there, pso@bornontario.ca, and our phone number as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Isla. That's great.
I'll stop sharing here
Okay.
if I figure out how to do it. There we go.
Okay. So now's the time where we can maybe have a little bit of discussion, some questions. Really, this is great information. It's really nice, I think, for everybody who's on the call to see some really reliable information because there's so much disinformation on the internet. And so it's really nice to see that reliable and to kind of see the connection between Born and PSO and then as well the Oh Mama website. So just to be able to see those connections. A question that I think a lot of people ask a lot, I don't see there's any questions yet. So I'll just ask a few and maybe people could think about some questions, put their hands up. Or type them out, but how often is the information updated on your PSO website?
Yeah, so it's almost in real time, I would say, maybe with a couple week lag. Anytime we have a new publication, a paper that's been published, we will update our website to have that on there, and corresponding content on whatever page needs to be updated. If there are, as I mentioned, if we notice a trend in our prenatal screening information line where we're getting the same type of question over and over again, we usually respond quite quickly to make sure that that information is maybe brought or highlighted, more readily available on our website, or we might create handouts. So I would say that anytime we notice that there's anything off, or if we hear that there's information that's outdated, we update it very quickly.
Okay, great. You currently as well have 15 languages in your patient resources. Is there a plan to expand those languages or kind of stick to those that are the main 15
No.
languages?
It's a good question. The 15 languages that were selected were from the census data, I believe, of the 15 most commonly spoken languages in Ontario, and that's why they started with those. But we have had a few requests at conferences for other languages where maybe that provider lives in a certain pocket where they have a large Ukrainian population or a large Russian population, for example. So it's definitely in talks to expand that. But I think right now we're trying to focus on getting our existing resources in more languages than just English and French. And then perhaps we can expand from there.
Great. Are there any questions anybody has? Feel free to raise your hand. Oh, do we have? Okay. Ashley's put a question. Is there a difference in accuracy between first and second trimester genetic testing?
That's a really great question. I'm actually going to pull up that slide again. If it's okay, Mariah, I'm going to just share my screen. Here we go. Just going to fast forward a little bit to that slide. So there's a slight difference in accuracy. It's not too much of a difference. Sorry for this scrolling. Here we go. Okay. Yeah, so what you can see here. Okay, so the first thing I want to say is when we do first trimester screening, it's the MT ultrasound and blood work. When we do second trimester screening, it's blood work alone. So the accuracy is slightly different, SDS being slightly lower, and part of that is because that ultrasound component isn't incorporated. So what you can see here, so this is comparing EFTS and STS right here on your screen. So the sensitivity, so the detection rates are pretty similar. So for Down syndrome, for first trimester screening, the detection rate is 87.98%. The detection rate on second trimester screening is 87.5. So those are very similar. The false positive rate is slightly higher for second trimester screening. When we talk about trisomy 18, it's a little bit trickier to compare because we don't have enough data in the Born Information System at this time for second trimester screening detection rate for trisomy 18. Part of the reason for that, or most of the reason for that, is trisomy 18 is very rare. So to be able to have enough data to be able to say how accurate the screening is really does take some time. But the false positive rate is similar across EFTS and STS. The confidence intervals are here, so you can see that they're pretty wide. So in general, ideally, because it involves the nuchal translucency ultrasound information, if we can do first trimester screening, we would prefer that. But of course, we know sometimes people go in for their NT ultrasound and they're actually further along in the pregnancy than we thought. And so they're not in that eligible NT window, in which case we would say, go ahead and do second trimester screening between 14 weeks and 20 weeks and 6 days. So both are absolutely valid tests with very similar accuracy, at least for Down syndrome that we know of yet.
Okay. I saw a hand up, but it went down. So, are there any other questions at all anybody has? All right. We may be giving some time back to people in their day then. Thank you so much, Isla, for giving all this great information. I think it's really helpful when we can learn and see what kind of information is out there. It may be helpful for the public health units on the call as well. It may be helpful to put some of that information on your websites and things like that as well, because you know it is from a trusted source. And I think that's important. And it is Ontario based, which is important as well. So.
Yeah, I think just while since you brought that up, Paula, we would be more than happy to work with the individual units. I know you each have different websites for your units, but we would be more than happy to work with each one. If you feel like you want to link to Prenatal Screening Ontario, we would really support that, and we would be happy to help facilitate that in any way that we can. And we are always here if any questions come up. Prenatal screening related. And as I mentioned, I don't know how much printed resources are still something that people want. I know everything can be available online at your fingertips, but some people do prefer paper. So if you do have anything that you'd like to order for your unit, we're also happy to send that out.
All right. So if there's no further questions, then thank you so much, everybody, for attending. And we appreciate your time. And hopefully, it's given you some really good information and some food for thought. Certainly, it's always good to have refresher information. Here's some upcoming Born webinars that will be coming up, and you can use the QR code to check them out. Anyways, the next one coming up is Indigenous Data Sovereignty, which is coming up on the 24th, and Born Connect in July, and Data to Action in July as well. Anyways, have a great day, everybody, and thanks so much for your time. Feel free to reach out with any questions. Thanks again. Bye now.